So true confessions this morning. I love home improvement television. If Roy is walking out of the room for just a minute, I flip it over to a home improvement show. I don't care if it's the Property Brothers or Fixer Upper or Flip and Flop. Whatever the show, I love it. Roy doesn't. So we went to Waco Friday night to have dinner with Libby and Bill Bellinger. And so we got there a little early. And so, well, I thought we should stop by Magnolia's. I see the head shaking, so I know who's in this with me. So we stopped by Magnolia's just to check out and see how Chip and Joanne are doing. I'm completely addicted. The show Flip or Flop is one that I love, and it's this couple in California who buy these homes for a lot of money. And a lot of times they buy the houses without even having seen the inside. So the best part of the show is when they finally get the key and they unlock the door and they go in and they get to see how bad the house really is. And the whole premise of the show is, will they be able to flip this house or will it flop? And will they lose the money that they've invested? The funny thing is I've never seen one flop. They've never shown a flop. They always make money, and it's usually a lot of money. So for 6 or 8 weeks of work, they do pretty well. But another thing that I've always noticed on all of these home improvement shows, and probably in real life too, is that there's always a surprise. Something happens where they either can't do part of the remodel or they have to come up with more money because it wasn't in the budget. I always laugh at that because I think, don't they ever watch this show to know? There's gonna be something that happens. They always need more money. But most all of the shows are looking for one thing. They're looking for a house that is like brand new without having to pay for a brand new house. They pretty much all want to take something that's old and make it new again. That sounds really great, doesn't it? If only it were that easy. Our scripture today tells us that God has that ability to make all things new, even us, as old or broken or scarred or just plain worn out as we are. God can make all things new. In light of all that's been going on in the last week or so, floodings and earthquakes and fires and deaths, it seems impossible to think about God making all things new again, doesn't it? Sometimes we lift our heads to the sky and we say, God, what are you doing to me? Why are you doing this? You're supposed to be giving us everything that we need and seeing to it that my life is perfect, right? But is that really what it's all about? Are we here so that God can make all things great for us? And for that matter, do we feel like God is punishing us when it's not great? I had a little bit of sadness this week as I remembered the Oklahoma City bombing 19 years ago. Most of you know I was there, right in the midst of it. Something that will never be a memory that I will forget. But I'm glad to say that it's not at the forethought of my mind. And I was actually in my office writing a check when I wrote the date and thought, oh my goodness, it's today. And I hadn't thought about it. Usually I think about it all month or at least all week, but not this year. And so when it hit me and I stopped for a minute and I looked back, I have a plaque on my bookshelf that is from the stained glass windows of a First Baptist that were broken that day. And I stopped and I looked at it and I thought back to that day. And then I started thinking about 4 weeks ago when Roy and I were back in Oklahoma for the week. And we drove through downtown Oklahoma City. There were new shops. There were new restaurants. There were new places to live. Traffic in Oklahoma City. There was traffic. It was a bright, happy place. And right in the middle of it all is this beautiful memorial park that just over 19 years ago was a tall federal building full of workers and children and busy workers. And today is a peaceful, beautiful memorial to those who lost their lives that day. That city has been made new again. Not by the removal of the pain and suffering, that's still there. But through the pain and suffering came new life. New life. That's what God does for us. Not the promise of perfect. Not the promise of easy or always happy. But the promise that one day all will be made new. One day we'll all live with God in a place of peace. The old made new. That, frankly, isn't what we usually think about when we think about Revelation, is it? We think about that scary apocalypse, people struggling and fighting, but that's not what we read here. It started in a beautiful garden. And it ends in a new beginning, perfection. How often do we feel like we need to be remade? How often do we feel broken or out of date or just unclean? It's not about a flip or a flop with God. It's just like the show. With God, it's a guaranteed perfect redo. Our Acts scripture today gives us another vision, a rather strange story that Peter tells about a vision that we read in, earlier in Acts. And he retells the vision today. And it's a vision that may seem weird, but it clearly tells us a few things. And one is that the early church, those believers, they were not afraid to express their opinion. Now, this may come back to bite me, but Peter entered that church. And he faced those critics, and he walked up to them, and he spoke his truth. Sometimes in the church, we avoid confrontation, don't we? We don't like it. I admit that it's not fun to confront those who differ with you. But oftentimes, rather than confront, we talk around, and we end up hurting one another more than if we had just been honest and confronted the issue. Peter didn't just pretend that he didn't know what others were saying about his relationships with the Gentiles. So he walked right in and he told them a story. Now, I love the fact that Peter didn't walk in and give them a theological discussion. I love that he didn't walk in and have a debate with the apostles and the believers. He told them a story. A story. Debates and arguments don't usually change people's mind. They typically crystallize differences. But a story can sometimes make things clear. Our own stories especially can change hearts and lives. Look at Jesus. How did he get a lot of his points across? He told stories. How often do we share our stories? I love the fact that the last Wednesday night of every month this year, we've been sharing our church's story. Things that have happened to make us who we are today. This Wednesday, we actually become 64 years old as a church. We look pretty good for 64, don't we? That's a lot of stories to tell. Some of those stories make us laugh and give us joy. And some of those stories are hard to hear and hard to remember. But look at us today. There have been times when we've made some difficult decisions and we've had to change the way we do things. And that's what Peter did today in our story. He told them a story that made them stop and think about the way they did church. I also love that this passage shows us that we keep growing as a community of faith. There was no question at the time that there were certain things that all people must adhere to in order to be followers. But Peter dared to push that issue. He dared to say, what difference does that make? And there was tension in the community. Luckily, we don't ever have that. But they were having that old issue of the ins and the outs. Those who wanted to draw a narrow circle around those who are in. And then the people who wanted to expand the circle so that everyone had a place. Verse 12 says it best, go and don't distinguish between them and us. Don't distinguish. And then verse 17 says, who was I that I could hinder God? Think about that for a moment. What if we asked that question of ourselves all the time? Who are we that we could hinder God? How often do we try to hinder God? What would have happened if the church that day had closed the door to Gentiles? Would Christianity today be a sect within Judaism? Where would our faith be? If we look back through time, things have changed a lot in the church. Many think that the church has given in to society and allowed society to rule the church. Others look and say, wait, why did we think that? And was it really the right way to interpret what God intended and what Jesus lived? In this new creation, this place, God will live among mortals. Is it really limited to certain people or is it open to all? Can we see the potential inside each and every person to be servants of God? Can we open ourselves up to see a new place where we can all live in harmony with one another? Can we begin to live that vision here and now? There's a hymn in our hymnal. It's page 545. And I would love it if you would open your hymnals to it. I've loved this hymn for a very long time. We don't sing it very often, but it speaks to me of seeing God in every person, seeing God in every life, seeing God in the world around us. We're going to sing it in a few moments, but I wanted us to actually look at the words to this hymn because they speak volumes. In the bulb, there's a flower. In the seed, there's an apple tree. In cocoons, there's a hidden promise of butterflies will soon be free. In the cold and snow of winter, there's a spring that waits to be, unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. There's a song in every silence, seeking words and melody. There's a dawn in every darkness, bringing hope to you and me. From the past will come the future. What it holds, a mystery, unrevealed until its season, something God alone can see. And our end is our beginning. In our time, infinity. In our doubt, there is believing. In our life, eternity. In our death, resurrection. At the last, a victory. Unrevealed until its season. Something God alone can see. As we stand and sing this hymn together, I invite you to listen to God's voice in you and to find God in each person you meet and in each thing that you see.